All righty, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast, which is part of the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. I am your host, Noah Rubin. Today is episode 71, and we're going to be diving into another episode of our Dynasty Outlook series. We're going to be talking about power forwards, and I'm going to be joined by Harley Scotland, who is the host of the Punting Losses podcast. So let's go ahead and get into it. All right, this is the fourth episode of this five-episode mini-series, so you probably already know what's going to be going on for this episode, so I'm going to go ahead and bring in Harley, and we are going to get ready to talk about power forwards. Before we dive into that, Harley, how are you?
I'm good. I'm doing very well. Excited to talk through power forwards. It was a tough one, trying to split the forwards between if they're a center, if they're a small forward, if they're a power forward, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that was definitely it's entirely up to everyone's individual interpretation of who plays what position, or it's like maybe there's a guy that is currently playing power forward for their team, but they're definitely more of a small forward. So it's like, how do you categorize it? It felt like when I was in the small forward episode with William Harris that like every single person we kind of differentiated on as far as what position they were, which happens, but it's not like we're having to compare everybody individually. We can just kind of talk about dynasty guys, and this is just a fun way to organize it. So we'll go ahead and get started. Our four categories. The first is the best of the best, the top dynasty guys. I have my little slideshow here with two of the four guys that I would have in the top tier. And really, it's probably closer to three, but I have a fourth guy I wanted to kind of include. But it's, and again, this is, Jason Tatum is probably a prime example of somebody that is, it's just open to your interpretation as far as whether he's a small forward or power forward. But Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Scottie Barnes. And then I'm going to throw in Paolo Banchero as well as a fourth name. Harley, how do you feel about the names that I just mentioned?
Yeah, I think definitely had a couple of those as well. Giannis, for me, it's a bit of a tricky one because you sort of want to punt free throws with him, I think, as well. So I punt free throws on threes in my main builds. So for me, he's awesome. But if you're sort of banking on getting those stats, then he might not be great for your team. The other one I just wanted to add in there, I think it was Chet as well, which is also borderline center. So that's kind of where the arguments begin about where some of these guys are actually playing. Hopefully this season, he's more of a power forward with Hartenstein coming in.
Yeah, that's a good one because I just always like Chet's just a center to me, but because that's what he played during his quote unquote rookie season, his second year after he was drafted. But they brought in Hartenstein, so I guess we'll see who they start and maybe it'll change game to game. So he'll be a power forward slash center. So that's definitely like throwing in Chet with this group. I believe I'd have him ranked over the rest of these guys. It'd probably be pretty close with Jason Tatum. Just keeping on the subject of Chet, how would you rank him against some of the guys we've talked about being Tatum, Giannis, Scottie Barnes, and maybe even Paolo?
I would have him. I like Scottie Barnes as well. I think he's another one that's still going to continue to improve. He was one that I would have liked to include, but I thought of him more of a small forward as well. And even the podcast, it's weird. He plays like every position. I think I'd have Chet very high. Tatum's another one. You mentioned him already. Sort of does everything. But I think Chet giving you as many blocks as he does sort of tips the scale a little bit. He sort of can win you that category on his own. Maybe you need another one or two guys that provide a few blocks, but once you've got him in your team, you've sort of tied up that category. And then he's extremely efficient as well. Over 53% last year from the field. And there's definitely room with him moving to the power forward position with Hartenstein coming in. I think he should get more threes, which will only increase his scoring as well. Maybe efficiency drops a little bit with that. But I think just with the talent around them, his assists can also come up as well.
Yeah, he's a fascinating fantasy player because obviously he's super skinny. So he was, and then he missed his whole first season. So everybody's like, Well, I mean, it was a freak injury, but you could also point to it like, oh, he's super skinny, he's going to be injury prone, and then bam, he misses his whole first season. But he played 82 games last year and was a top 20 player by Ninecat scoring. So, like, that's fantastic. And he gets overshadowed a little bit just by Wemby, and because he's just a 7'1" guy that can do a lot of things with the ball and is a good defender, blocks shots really well. And then Wemby's just 7'5" and hits step back threes. So I guess, you know, it's not quite as exciting, but Chet is still fantastic for fantasy and has a lot of room to improve. So definitely, I don't know, very fun dynasty guy. I don't even want to say I'm working on them. I started working on some dynasty rankings and haven't touched them in a little while, but I think I had him like 6th, if I'm not mistaken. I can't even find him right now, but
that's good.
Elite for sure. Jason Tatum's an interesting guy because he's always ranked like pretty high, like early second round guy, but he's getting drafted a little bit earlier. Plays a bunch of games, well-rounded stat set, and it just feels like he's underrated. Like, it feels like he's getting overhated. Partially right now, it's just like an interesting dynamic with the Team USA stuff and him not really getting minutes. So he's getting hated on because of his defenders saying that he should be getting minutes. And it's just like a very, it's an interesting dynamic, I think, is just a great way to put it. Would you say that Tatum's, this is almost like it's like a buy low period because you're not going to get him for cheap, but I don't know. How do you feel about Tatum? I guess this is just kind of what I'm asking.
He might be like the good, boring sort of pick. Like,
yeah,
he gives you good value and you're never going to be upset having him. But yeah, when you think about like maybe some other guys in the same area, he's a little bit older than them now. How old is he exactly? I think 26, maybe. So yeah, maybe he's like,
yeah, 26.
The boring middle of the road pick who's still really, really good. So maybe there's some sort of like trade compensation for that. But for me, like, he suits so many different types of punts that you're building. So you'll never be upset with having him on your team.
Yeah. I'm never going to be upset, but I'm also never going to be super happy about drafting him in a redraft league, or like if I'm doing a dynasty startup saying, okay, Jason Tatum's going to be the guy I'm building my team around him. And I'm probably not alone in that, but it's probably not like common consensus that everybody hates drafting Jason Tatum or anything, but he doesn't have the same excitement around him in fantasy that I feel like other players have. And that's not a statistical analysis. That is just vibes. That's all I'm talking about here. Obviously, he's incredibly effective when you just go across the board and just look at all of his numbers. I mean, 27 points, 3 threes, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, half a block, decent shooting splits. Like, yeah, that plays pretty well. So, I mean, he's going to be good for another 7-8 years at least. So, yeah, it's hard to knock him too much in Dynasty other than just saying, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, I think, like I said, there's nothing – you're never going to be over the moon about having him on your team, but he's just so solid. I guess the only point is that maybe compared to last year compared to the year before, he has dropped a little bit in terms of his points. So he's down, 3 points?
Hey, man. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm back. I don't know what that was. My internet didn't drop. I just came back to the tab and it was like, oh, you've been disconnected.
Huh. Because, it just kicked me out. It didn't say.
I kicked you out as well.
Yeah. So I don't know if it kicked me out.
Yeah. The only thing with Tatum is that his numbers did drop last year compared to the previous year. He's down 3 points, 0.1 of the three, half a rebound. So he is sort of getting to that point in his career where his numbers are capping out and it's just going to fluctuate by a few decimal points or a few points here and there on each category. So you've got sort of, what is he, 26. You've got a while of sort of what he's contributing now, but it should remain pretty consistent, I think.
Yeah, and I guess part of the reasoning for that is they just added more talent. They added Drew Holiday. They added Kristaps Porzingis. Like him and Jaylen Brown both saw their usage go down this past season. Obviously, they weren't hurt too bad as far as awards and all-star appearances and stuff because they were winning almost every game.
Yeah.
But that's a priority for Boston. It's like I'm sure a lot of people are expecting or hoping for Jason Tatum to have a revenge season after Steve Kerr benched him. But it's like they don't care. Like they want to win championships. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tatum dropped a minute or two per game or missed a couple extra games just because they have a championship under their belt. Like they're talented enough that they can probably coast through the regular season, win 55 games and be a top, one of the top seeds in the East. So like they're able to prioritize everybody being healthy for the playoffs and potentially going back to back because they didn't lose anybody. Like they absolutely could do that. So
I know you're talking about power forwards, but potentially we could see the same thing happen to Shai, who I would hate because he is one of my guys, like one of my favorite players in the whole NBA. But I think as they add more talent in that team and the young guys get better, their reliance on him is going to have to come down. Maybe we see a similar thing happen to him. I don't know if it's going to be this year or next year or when it's going to happen. But, yeah, I guess the bearer of some potentially bad news is Shai may see a slight dip or a slight cap in his year-to-year improvement.
Yeah. For sure. Another guy, you said you love Scotty Barnes or you're very high on Scotty Barnes. I really like Scotty Barnes. I feel like it's difficult to not. He had a disappointing year two, but year three was his full-on breakout season. He's only 23 years old. Second-round finisher last season, obviously contributing across the board. How much higher is Scotty Barnes' ceiling like compared to what he's already shown?
Yeah, I think his defensive numbers are amazing. So last year, 1.3 steals, 1.5 blocks. That's huge. And he's still improving those year on year as well. So as long as we're still seeing year on year improvement and only 23 years old, really the sky's the limit for what he can sort of reach. Every single stat I think has improved, besides maybe his field goal percentage from year one, but that's just opportunity. The points should come up. Threes should come up. But I guess when you're seeing more threes, maybe his field goal percentage does come down a little bit. He has a bit prone to shooting a few too many threes when he's not too hot. But he does a bit of everything. 8 rebounds last year, 6 assists. I mentioned his defensive numbers, but he can do everything. So if he can sort of follow the same trajectory, I guess, as Tatum in terms of year-on-year improvement, sort of reaching a cap around 26 years old, then, yeah, the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be kind of interesting. Like Toronto's just going to be a very interesting team this year because Scotty Barnes had his breakout season while they were at Pascal Siakam for a little bit, but he was definitely getting traded and then finally got traded. Same thing with OG Anunoby, first year without Fred VanVleet. But then they added Emmanuel Quickley, who was really good after the trade deadline. RJ Barrett, who was still not great for fantasy, but played well after the trade deadline and is still going to be an important part of the rotation. So I'm not in the same way that we're like the Celtics or the Thunder, where they just have so many other players that it's going to just limit Scotty Barnes. But I'm curious about exactly what his role is going to be, just because they have those two other guys that can average 20 points per game. And Quickley is going to need to, I mean, he will have the ball in his hands a good bit and be looking to get some assists as well. But the defensive numbers aren't going anywhere. And I'm assuming the rebounds aren't going to get any worse. So hopefully, maybe that'll help with his efficiency, is having some of those talented scorers around him, but they still make it clear, like, hey, this is Scotty Barnes' team, guys.
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think also his assists can come up as well. His in college, he was just a really good passer just in general. Mm-hmm. So I think he has great court vision. He's not the most like inventive through the legs, around the back sort of crazy passer. He just makes really good timely passes. So yeah, with the more this team builds and the better they get, the more players they add, definitely can see those assist numbers coming up as well.
Yeah. And the other power forward that I have was Paolo Banchero, who statistically, just like nine cap value, has not been there for elite. So maybe it's a stretch to even be talking about him with this. But he's so freaking good. And he hasn't turned 22 years old, averaged 22.5 points, 1.5 threes, almost 7 boards, 5.5 assists, just under a steal, half a block. The shooting percentages and turnovers are bad. Defensive numbers aren't great, which limits his value in nine cat leagues, but he's such a special player. And it's like, he's a six, he's 6'10", 250. Like, he's too skilled for that field goal percentage to stay as low as it is. I don't know. How closely would you value Paolo Banchero in comparison to the top guys we just talked about?
He's not in the same tier, but I did have him in this sort of section to talk through as well. Just because he has that really high upside that you really want in Dynasty. His scoring is already there. He gets assists, he gets rebounds. Yes, the defensive numbers aren't there. They weren't amazing in college. It was 0.9 blocks and 1.1 steals, which if he can get that, he'd be really happy with that. So I guess how close can he get to those levels? Obviously, it's a lot harder in the NBA to get the same stats in college. But I think if he keeps improving the way he is, he'll be in the discussion with these other guys. And we're talking about it now, so it won't be long until the masses are as well, I think.
Definitely. And is there anybody else that we haven't talked about that you would want to throw their name out as far as either being close to the best of the best or that, you know, by the end of the season might be worthy of consideration for this tier?
I guess the one we skipped through was Giannis. And he's in my team as probably one of the main guys I've got in my main league. And I think it works so well for me because I'm punting free throws and threes. So he's like made for my team pretty much. So there are going to be leagues and teams where he is destined, I guess, to be in your team. So it's almost about finding the perfect trade to try and get him in. But the thing is, everyone in your league knows he's made for your team. So if he's not on your team, they're going to be asking a premium to get him on there. But I think, yeah, I'm always worried about his future because he is so athletic and he relies upon that so much. He's always so close to injuring something more seriously and taking a decent amount of time. He's had a lot of just niggles and small injuries that are sort of, impacted his seasons without sort of taking him out completely. So I'm always worried about that. But I think the stats he brings and just the pure volume of counting stats is always amazing.
Yeah, I agree entirely. He's unreal in fantasy, especially if you just build the right way around him. Like, he's incredible. So yeah, definitely deserves to be in the top tier. Maybe a couple other names that I want to throw out, not talk too far in depth about. Lauri Markkanen is probably pretty close. And you know what? I'm realizing that I don't have my slides up anymore. So I'm going to go ahead and pull that up. And then we're going to move on to some of the underrated guys. And one of the other guys that I wanted to talk about that could be in that top tier is Jaren Jackson Jr. And he's not necessarily a guy that's like dramatically underrated, but I feel like after a down season, his like kind of value in general has gone down because he was asked to play a different role than where he had the majority of his fantasy success. I was outside the top 50 last year after being a first round guy the year before. With Ja Morant out, like he was forced to take more shots, tougher shots. His field goal percentage dropped dramatically. Averaged a career high in points just because he was forced to shoot a lot more. So the blocks went down because he couldn't be quite as aggressive on defense. They couldn't afford for him to get in foul trouble, even if they weren't going to win, even if he stayed out of foul trouble. But they asked him to play a very different role. So it's just heading into this next season, he's going to go back to being what he's good at alongside John Morant, Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, like a very good, talented team around him. Do you feel that Jaren Jackson Jr.'s value is a little bit low and that maybe this is a good time to buy back in?
I think he definitely had a really rough year last year. It was so frustrating to watch because he'd be playing so well, but then he'd pick up a couple fouls and you knew, okay, he's going to have to sit now for long periods. And then he'd come on, get frustrated and foul again. So he does sometimes let emotions get the best of him. And it's, yeah, detriment to him really. But like you said, if you look at his season before when he had the talent around him, where he wasn't asked to do so much and could really focus on things he does well, he was getting 3 blocks a game. Huge, huge value there. 18.6 points. Once again, really good value there. He shoots threes at a better percentage. And even rebounds, although he wasn't the greatest rebounder, he never really has been. It was still decent, 6.8 rebounds the year before. So I think if he can get back to those numbers and maybe keep some of the points that he kind of added this year, but then make them more efficient because he's got the talent around him with Ja kind of setting him up more, the value's definitely going to jump back up. I think last year he was around 40th, and the year before much, much higher than that. So, yeah, I think if you can get those numbers back up to where they were, the efficiency comes back in, the blocks come back up, yeah, the sky's the limit for him. And he's still so young. He's not even 25 yet.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he can – this is like my ideal stat set for him next year would be like 20 points – 1.7, 1.8 threes, 6.5 to 7 rebounds, which I don't know. Maybe that's, this is just ideal. 2.5 blocks, a steal. Like if he can kind of, like you said, like kind of mesh between the last two seasons, takes the good from each year. Like he's incredible for fantasy. Like he's, I feel like kind of like we were talking about, or I guess I was talking about with Chet, it's like he's underappreciated because of Wemby, because Jaren Jackson Jr., like his blocks and threes, which like he's the best in the league at getting both blocks and threes. And then Wemby comes in, just everything, everybody, yeah. Nobody cares about Jaren Jackson Jr. anymore because this guy is doing it better. But it's like, it's still fairly rare. Like you don't get a ton of guys that are averaging 1.5 or more threes and 2 or more blocks. Like you're not, that's not common. So still incredibly valuable. Who do you have as either one or two of your underrated guys?
So one I've got in here is Zion. And he's a tough one because he's been hampered by injuries. And last year he played 70 games, which was huge. So for him to come out and finally put a season together where he is contributing almost every night, was massive for, one, his confidence, and two, for the fans of New Orleans as well. But I think he should be able to break that kind of minute barrier that he's had early on in the season, and that should increase his overall minutes. So he had 31.5 minutes last year. I think he can get up to, I don't know if he'll ever be at 35, but if he can get up to a couple more minutes, 33, maybe 33.5, he should improve passing out of double teams as well. I think that team's got a lot of shooting around him, so he just needs to have the vision to be able to find the next guy. He's had year-on-year growth with his assists as well, so should see constant improvement there. His points and field goal percentage are down the last compared to last two seasons, so can he get back up to shooting better with, I guess, the guys around him? And then do his blocks and steals kind of keep coming up? His steals and blocks have increased every year as well. They're not like they were in college, where he was quite the force defending the rim. But I still think his blocks can come back up, and his steals are, they're pretty good now. They're 1.1 steals last year. That's decent. I'd be happy with that. But I still think there's room for improvement there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think adding in DeJounte Murray is going to be interesting because like having Zion with probably the best passer that he's had since Lonzo Ball, That should be pretty fun getting him in some, maybe some pick and roll opportunities. The only, I mean, they have, I think they added like Daniel Tice, but really like Eve Misi, who's a rookie, is probably their main center. Okay, so the other ones on their roster, Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, another undersized center, and Trey Jemison, who's with the Grizzlies last year. So no proven center. We may see Zion play some center, which could help maybe with some rebounding numbers, may help the blocks just because of where he'll be positioned on the court. And he's obviously just a freak athlete, so if he's given the opportunities, I'm sure that it'll work out pretty well. So yeah, I'm expecting him to be better this upcoming season, make improvements, especially with the field goal percentage, where he's been very strong in the past, and it was slightly down this year, and the scoring was slightly down as well. But I think it also kind of depends on what they do with Brandon Ingram, because if he's gone, then, you know, Zion is a 1A, 1B, maybe with DeJounte as far as scorers. But if you're having to worry about DeJounte, CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, Zion all getting shots, as well as getting Trey Murphy looks, it's really going to be an interesting dynamic for them to kind of figure out, I guess, hierarchy within the offense, and trying to get everybody some looks. So the Pelicans will be interesting to keep an eye on. One, and actually I'm just going to lump these two guys together. The other two underrated guys that I have went back to back in their draft in 2023. It's Jairus Walker and Taylor Hendricks. And I think they went back to back. Let me double check this. Yes. Okay. They went 8 and 9. Okay. I was, it was because the Wizards and Pacers swapped picks for Bilal Coulibaly and Jairus Walker. So Jairus went 8. Okay, cool. So yeah, two guys that were incredibly talented coming out of college and had good fantasy friendly games and just didn't do a ton during their rookie years. Taylor Hendricks did more during the second half, and I guess the final like month and a half, 2 months of this season after Utah kind of pulled the plug. I'm expecting him to have a larger role earlier on this season, which, I mean, the numbers were fine at times. Nothing super exciting his rookie year. Just certain games showing flashes here and there. Final 2 months, 9 points, 1.5 threes, under 6 boards, an assist, just under a steal, just under a block. Like, you can see the makings of a guy. It's like, okay, if we give him enough minutes, he gets used to develop. He hasn't turned 21 yet. Like, he's going to be a very well-rounded fantasy guy. And it's the same thing with Jairus Walker. Not exactly the same, but still just a well-rounded skill set. But he didn't see a ton of minutes at all during his rookie season because the Pacers are freaking talented. So it might be a year or two before he's a large enough part of their rotation for him to really contribute a ton. But I feel like both those guys, you know, obviously rookies have a ton of hype, and if they don't have a really good rookie year, then the value kind of drops a little bit, even if they're still really talented players. It just hasn't quite panned out yet. So both of those guys, I feel like this is a pretty decent or pretty good time to kind of buy back in, where it's not like a clear path to, oh, they're about to have a breakout season, but they're still really good.
Yeah, I actually had Jairus Walker in my sleeper section. I was kind of hoping people might have just forgotten about him and moved on with their lives. But I loved Jairus coming out of the draft. He was one of my guys. Like you said, just lacks opportunity with the team that he's in at the moment. I think they've just got so much talent, and for him to break through is going to be tough. But just looking at his G League numbers, 35 minutes a night, 21 points, 5.8 rebounds, 4.6 assists, which I didn't expect him to get that many assists, which is huge, a steal, and then 1.2 blocks. So the talent is there. He's like brimming with talent. He just needs to get the opportunity. And I'm so hyped for him. The amount of last athleticism in his game is huge as well. He just needs to get on the court, I think.
Yeah, no, it's what it's going to be. And with Pascal Siakam there, Obi Toppin there, Jalen Smith's gone, but Aaron Nesmith kind of plays every position, just kind of whatever they need. But I guess he was more of a three last year now that they have actual power forwards. But yeah, there's guys in front of Jairus Walker. So eventually it should work out, hopefully sooner rather than later. But he's still super young. So if we have to wait a little bit, we will. We will move on to the overrated section. And this is guys that not necessarily stink, but just that I'm a little bit lower on, or that you're a little bit lower on, than general consensus. I'll let you start for this. Who is one of your, and I think you have three, so actually this will work out nicely. So who's one of your overrated guys?
So I'll start off with G.G. Jackson, who I think is a bit harsh because he is still so young. but I just don't like the stats that he offers. For me, he's just an inefficient shooting slash scoring guy. And with the amount of talent already in Memphis, it's going to be so hard for him, especially this year with Bane and Morant back to playing full-time and Jackson in there as well. It's just going to be hard to get shots, let alone any stats. And if your stats that you're relying on are shots, then it's going to be even harder for him.
Yeah, I agree. I'm had a really, really good rookie year on some very big scoring nights. But aside from the points and threes, you're right. Like, the stat set isn't great. I mean, as a rookie, his number is 14.6 points, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, and assist, half a steal, half a block. Mentioned inefficient shooter, 42.8% from the floor, 75% from the free throw line. So it's not like that's great either. And now what's his role look like now that the team is actually healthy and not just playing young guys every single night? They're actually trying to win basketball games. So
yeah, I don't know what else he can do. I mean, if he gets traded, and all the offense comes through him, and it's just more of the same thing. Like, I haven't seen him do anything else. And that can be valuable in your team if you need points, then he's the guy that you should go after. But yeah, I just don't think there's much else he can offer, which is a shame because he's so young. And I think if there was sort of an intent by him to sort of improve some other areas of his game, that would be awesome. But I just haven't seen it.
Yeah. And, you know, Memphis might be okay with this guy as when everybody's healthy, he's their seventh or eighth man that comes in, plays 20 minutes, and is a very good scoring option, floor spacer. He's also, like you mentioned, he's still super young. So, like, maybe we do see something or things improve, and I'm sure we will over the next 4 years, and he'll still only be 24. So, like, there's still room for improvement. But you're right. Like, he's very overhyped after this rookie season that was pretty much all just based on opportunity. Like, it wasn't. Yeah. Like, he beat out a bunch of previous starters, earned minutes, and, like, he's solidified his role here. It's like he'll have a role, but it's not going to be as large as it was last year. He's not going to have the green light that he had. So he's good at basketball, but it's not super fantasy friendly at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
My first overrated guy is Jabari Smith, and I really liked him heading into his draft. And I've just slowly kind of liked him less and less for fantasy. The idea of Jabari Smith, I think, is really good for fantasy. He is a guy that can space the floor, rebounds pretty well. He's a really good defender that, like, he just hasn't gotten defensive stats, but it's like he hasn't shown himself to be an elite fantasy guy yet, or that he's going to average a steal and a block. Like, he's gotten close, but he hasn't shown, I guess, that he's going to get like significantly above that. The shooting percentage isn't great. And then it's the guys around him, like, this team is just really, really talented. So it's like, where does he fall in the pecking order as far as how many shots he's getting? Is he going to get, you know, I mean, he shot 11 shots per game this past season. Is he going to get up to 14 or 15 with Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Amen Thompson's developing, Reed Shepard's coming in, Cam Whitmore's there, Tari Eats is there, Alper Cengiz, like, this is such a talented team where it's like he might just be like a very good young, like, glue guy for this very good young team, and it doesn't result in great fantasy production. And this is, granted, just like fantasy strictly, he might be more impactful for this team than he is in fantasy basketball simply because of who else is on this team and the lack of opportunities for him. And through his first 2 years, I'm not super confident that he's ready to take a dramatic step anytime soon.
It's a weird one because, like you, coming into the NBA, I was such a big fan of him. I thought, this guy's amazing. He could be the next Jaren Jackson. But then he never quite wowed me, I don't think. And the reason it's a bit weird is you think he's at Houston, the team that's meant to be giving all this opportunity to young guys. So he should be getting this opportunity, yeah. But he's just not. And at some point you sort of blame, oh, the guys aren't giving him the ball. They're just taking the shots themselves. But you've got to take some onus of your own game and think, no, this is my opportunity. This is my shot. I'm going to take it. And I just don't think he's got that. I don't know if it's confidence or if it's that demand, I guess, with that team. But, yeah, I sort of agree. But I do think he's got the potential. If he goes somewhere else, he could be huge. And I don't know if it's just because of the Houston team and the way the players are kind of the team structured. But if he goes somewhere else, it could be amazing for him. But I don't think they'll ever let him go anywhere else because, like you said, he's important for them in terms of real life value. He is a good defender without necessarily getting blocks. He can shoot the three. He's a big that shoots a three, which is also very valuable. The other thing with Houston is they're just – the way they're building this team is a little bit odd in terms of normally when you're kind of tanking, you get the draft picks and then you build up with those guys. But Houston were very early on adamant in getting in some of these older guys to help develop this team with Fred VanVleet and then Dylan Brooks as well. But they're also guys that take the ball out of the hands of the young guys. And when you've got Jalen Green, who very much demands the ball out of the young guys' hands, it's not necessarily conducive to Jabari Smith Jr. getting much of his own shot. So it's almost like the perfect storm for him to have a poor time in Houston. And I think we're seeing that now.
Yeah, and then it feels like nobody on that team, I guess specifically for the young guys, it's like, they're not safe for minutes anymore. Like Jabari Smith has this isn't new, but like Tari Eason's right there. So it's like if Jabari Smith isn't giving them what they need, like Tari Eason's there. And then Jalen Green, if he's not giving them what they need, Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore, and Reed Sheppard are all ready to play and contribute or potentially ready to play. If we haven't seen Reed Sheppard play in the NBA yet, but these other guys that have a lot of upside that could steal minutes. We'll stop hating on Jabari Smith. I'll let you go on to your next guy you have as overrated.
The next one is Jeremy Sochan from the Spurs. So I just think the experiment they were running with Sochan being the point guard and delivering the ball is well and truly dust now. There's been minimal to no improvement in his game. So he... shooting 11.6 points last year, really no improvement at all since rookie year. Not even 1-3. There's no improvement there. 6.4 rebounds, which is actually up one rebound. 3.4 assists, which is up one assist. And you think him having the ball in his hands during that experiment would kind of increase those numbers, but it hasn't really. 0.8 steals, which is decent, but still no improvement. And then half a block, no improvement there either. And he's actually shooting worse now than his rookie year as well. I don't know. It's scary.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I was going to see if I could pull this up quickly, but his numbers in college, like he had a good stock rate in college, but it just hasn't translated to like him making an impact on the defensive end. So the defensive numbers, like you said, aren't there. They tried the point Sochan experiment for a bit. And even if that was just to like, maybe build some confidence in him, help him improve as a playmaker. It didn't lead to a ton of assists. Maybe you had a few games early on where the assists were good. I'm just a quick look through. I mean, he had a 9 assist game, a 7, a couple sixes, an 8, like early on. But I mean, he's not going to be their point guard. And, oh, they just added Chris Paul. So he's not going to be having the ball in his hands a ton. They still have Trey Jones. They just drafted Stephon Castle. So, yeah, he's a guy that I feel like, I'm glad you pointed it out as kind of like an overrated guy is because in my mind, when he came into the draft, like this is a fantasy friendly guy, but he hasn't really been that so far through his first 2 years in the NBA.
Yeah. I think he contributes in all categories, but they're not much in any category. So yes, he's getting stats everywhere, but they're not high in anywhere really. You mentioned college. So in college, per game, he averaged 0.7 blocks, but 1.3 still. So decent. Okay. So, where are those steals gone? Was never really much of a scorer in college, but yes, he was like a, he was thought of in the NBA as like a defensive sort of player. Maybe he's the sort of defensive player that sort of denies the opposition the ball and doesn't really get counting stats for it. I don't know. He's just, he's left me wondering a little bit when or if he's ever going to sort of see any improvement in his game since coming to the NBA. And I think now with Spurs getting Wemby, potentially that's good for him because the attention kind of really comes away from him. But we saw last year that didn't really help him at all. He's still doing the same sort of thing and he's not really improving anywhere.
Yeah, no, I agree. My second guy is Miles Bridges, who I don't know why people are – I mean, I get why last year, despite coming off the court stuff, people were wanting to draft him in later rounds of redraft leagues because he was very good in fantasy. And then he was going significantly later because there was question marks about how much he was going to be available. Miles Bridges isn't a guy that I personally want to have on any of my fantasy teams. But then that's just the off-the-court stuff. But then the on-the-court stuff, it's like he's good, but he's not like – I don't know. I'm not super excited about what he has done and what he did. And like looking at last season, 37.5 minutes per game, 21 points, 7.3 boards, 3.3 assists, almost a steal, 2.3 threes, 46.2% from the floor. A lot of that is going to go down, I think. His efficiency might improve with LaMelo healthy, assuming LaMelo is healthy. But, I mean, he's just kind of like the third guy behind LaMelo and Brandon Miller. Like, they're the stars of the team. I don't know. I don't think Miles Bridges has much more room for improvement. I don't think he's going to replicate what he did a few seasons ago where he's a third-round value. He's 26. Like, he's not super young, but, like, not super old, just kind of like in his prime. I don't know. I'm not seeing a ton of the hype with Miles Bridges, and I don't think the situation is great for him the way it was this past season. I don't know. And this might just be entirely vibes, but I'm not very high on Miles Bridges.
No, I agree. And you sort of don't, I agree. You don't really want him in your team. Yes. You don't want to associate with him in your team either. He 26.5 should be in his prime. Like you said, 21 points, which is high. But he doesn't do a whole lot in terms of assists, steals, or blocks. Field goal percentage, 46% isn't great either. And I think with them getting Brandon Miller, a lot of the focus will come to him. And they've obviously got Ball as well. So he's sort of going to be playing third fiddle. And you would imagine his points will come down from that. Maybe his threes stay about the same. Rebounds, you can see, probably about the same. But points, I can see coming down. I don't know why, but I feel like he was going to be a good defender. And then I never really established himself there either. So I'm not sure. I agree. He's sort of just a meh player who gets you some points.
Yeah, he's Tobias Harris that averages 20 points per game. Like, he's just kind of fairly well-rounded, and that's why his value looks good, but he's not quite as effective. But, yeah, I mean, that's all I got on Miles Bridges. If you want to give your other guy that's overrated.
The next one I had in here was Keegan Murray, who you briefly mentioned, I think, on your small forwards episode. But for him, I'll keep it short, sharp, and shiny. He was already 24. He came into the NBA a little bit older, I think. The amount of development he can do is capped. Sacramento are heavily capped, I think, in terms of the offensive options in there. They've got DeRozan, Sabonis, Fox, even Monk contributes a fair bit. So it's just hard for him to break through. Can he transition his game to adding more defensive numbers similar to college? In college, he had 1.9 blocks, 1.3 steals. So if he can add that to his game, then he becomes less reliant on being a shooting, scoring forward, and he can just focus more on the defensive ends with those. I guess with adding DeRozan, it's going to have to happen anyway. But, yeah, I'm just worried with them having DeRozan sort of establishing themselves as a potential powerhouse in the West, what's that going to do to his game?
Yeah, I agree. I think he is a very good shooter and he fits well with this team. And he's going to be like very important in real life, not fantasy, but the fantasy upside is definitely limited by adding in DeRozan. So now he just goes like probably loses a few shots per game. Already wasn't super efficient just because he's shooting a ton of threes. Rebounds aren't great. I mean, around a steal and a block, like hopefully that goes up because he'll in theory be doing less offensively. So hopefully he can get a little bit more contributions defensively. And maybe that is the path for him to have some more success in fantasy, but it's not like this is going to be a ton of, you know, dramatic upside for him. Like this definitely hurts what he can do over the next few years. DeRozan isn't going to derail his entire career because DeRozan's not going to be around that long. Yeah. Because he's, I don't know, is he 34-ish? Somewhere around there, maybe older. So he's probably done in a few years. So, but it definitely caps him for the next few seasons. And he's already 24. You said that. Like, he's not super young. He's same draft class as Jabari Smith, but he's 3 years older. So it's like Jabari Smith has a little bit more time. Keegan Murray, again, like he's 24. I'm not trying to say he's like, you know, 2 years away from retiring, but like he's close to what is supposed to be his prime. And is there room for him to improve a ton statistically? I don't know, but I do think he's valuable for what the Kings do. So like that's not necessarily going to be an expanded role for him in any capacity, but they also have had fairly good injury luck the past two seasons. Like DeMontis Bonus played 82 games last year, De'Aaron Fox 74, Keegan Murray 77, Malik Monk 72, Harrison Barnes 82 as well. And the year before that, it was 79 games for Sabonis, 73 for Fox, 82 for Harrison Barnes, 80 for Keegan Murray. So it's like they've been pretty healthy, which has helped the team, but it's also kind of limited Keegan Murray. So maybe like they haven't really dealt – and like this is such a weird thing for me. Like I feel weird talking about it, but like they haven't dealt with a ton of injuries yet. So maybe they're like kind of due for somebody too. Like knock on wood, like not wishing this on the Kings, but like – if that happens, does that help Keegan Murray? But again, like we're not going to analyze and like pray for injuries just for a guy to improve his numbers. Well,
the other thing as well is like he's not the young guy on an old team either. So it's not like they're going to retire and he's going to be free to sort of get the reins. Yeah. Like Sabonis is 28 and a half. I think Fox is like 26. He's the youngest of a sort of young team, I guess, or a team at least in their prime. So, yeah, even if like, DeRozan's 35, so he's definitely the oldest. Even if he retires, it's not like the seas part and he becomes this sort right. of fire of Sacramento. There's all these other guys sort of in the way in front of him.
Yep. All right, we'll move on to our last section, which is the sleepers. I have a bunch. We'll just kind of quickly hit through them. The two guys I have here, I have Peyton Watson in Denver and Olivier Maxence Prosper, who is in Dallas, which is very much a deep sleeper at this point. But Peyton Watson's basically just kind of waiting for Aaron Gordon to be done or like hopefully can kind of sort of move into more minutes. Like played 80 games this past season, just under 20 minutes per game. Like he's going to continue to play a significant bench role for Denver, but we're just kind of waiting on him to move into the starting lineup, in which case I think he's going to be very good in fantasy. Like Aaron Gordon's not old, so this might end up just like not working out. But Peyton Watson's about to turn 22, pretty good defensively, athletic guy. I think he's going to get a lot of easy looks playing alongside Jokic, just like. So we're just kind of waiting on that to happen. And then Maxence Prosper didn't play a ton during his rookie season. But he played fairly well in the G League. And I think he's just a guy to just not forget about because he's good. He is a little bit older. He's 22, just coming off his rookie season. But not a guy that we want to forget about.
Yeah, I like Watson. I think the number that stands out is his blocks, which has been awesome. And yeah, given the opportunity around Jokic, it's only going to help him. Like you said, how old's Gordon? He's
29, about to turn 29.
Yeah, okay. So he's not even 30 yet. So,
right.
I don't know. There's a feeling that Aaron Gordon's been in the league for a long, long, long time, but it's not all that long when he's only 29 years old.
Yeah, I think it was the 2014. I think he was 2014 draft class, I want to say.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's been like a decade, but like, I don't know. He's still only 29. So he's like, in theory, could play like 8 more seasons and then we never ever see Peyton Watson play alongside Jokic or whatever. But NBA teams change so quickly. So maybe there's some other sort of trade or free agency, something, money dispute that results in whatever else that eventually they just decide to move on. So fingers crossed, everybody.
One I had in here, you stop with Jarace Walker. But the other one I've got is Usman Jang from OKC, who I'm an OKC fan, so I've been watching him for a while, and he's absolutely killing G League. 32 minutes a night, 17.3 points, 7.8 rebounds, 6 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.8 blocks. He's just been really, really good there, and the opportunity has to be coming soon. So I know OKC is stacked, and I don't think he's ever going to break through and get a massive role on this team, but he's just so well-rounded that I think he deserves a spot in dynasty teams. He can contribute everywhere, steals, blocks, assists, rebounds, points, and he's decently efficient as well. And G League shooting 48% from the field and 70% from the line. He's just missing that opportunity at OKC, and it's just been so hard for him. And it's potentially going to get harder as OKC sort of makes some tough decisions on good guys they have to cut. But I'm a big believer in him going forward. I was never a huge fan of the pick. I thought he was a bit too much of a project, but is the project now complete since he's doing so well in the G League? I didn't ever think he'd get this many assists. He's become a really good passer. He's so long. He's a good rim defender as well. And I think with that height and that length, the rebounds sort of come naturally to him.
Yeah, he played pretty well this summer, aside from the field goal percentage was bad, but just in 3 summer league games, 15.7 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, 1.7 blocks, 2.7 threes. Like, that's fantastic for fantasy. And then he just shot 34.6% from the floor, which is not great, but everything else was really good. So hopefully he can start to shoot a little bit better, or just will shoot a little bit better across a larger sample size of games, because that was just 3 games. Yeah, definitely a guy to not forget about, because you mentioned it's like it seemed like a long-term project, but hopefully that's kind of nearing completion, and he's a guy that we can actually get some value out of in Dynasty. I'll mention, because I have 3 more, but I will mention 2 and then let you hit on your last one, and then I will throw one more out there. I have Tumani Kamara from Portland and Nikola Jovic from Miami. Kamara, I believe it's Kamara. It might be Kamara. I haven't checked that in a while. But Tumani is a guy that I remember just having like a really high motor when Phoenix drafted him. And then he was sent to Portland, I believe, in the DeAndre Ayton deal. So he went from, hey, this guy might be able to contribute to this team that needs really solid role players because they have all the scoring stuff figured out, to, oh, he's probably going to see a good bit of minutes as a rookie on a tanking team. And the numbers weren't fantastic as a rookie, but he's definitely a guy that's going to be in the NBA for a very long time, like going to contribute to winning. That'll get him on the floor, hopefully enough for him to continue to develop his stat set and be a more of a contributor in fantasy as he continues to grow as a player. And the other guy was Jovic from Miami, who kind of moved into a starting role for the Heat later in the year this past season. That didn't always mean he was getting a ton of minutes, because there was definitely some starts where he was playing less than 20 minutes per game. But if they're going to start him, he's only 21, 6'10" guy, can knock down threes, do a good bit, I guess, well-rounded as far as looking at his production. So I'm hoping that he'll continue to start for the Heat this season and play more of a starter's role, starter's minutes this upcoming year. And it wouldn't be shocking if he was closer to a top 150, top 100 finish. I mean, that would be, I think, best case scenario, but it wouldn't be totally out of his realm of possibilities for this upcoming season.
Yeah, definitely. I think you stole my Jairus Walker sleeper. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on Jairus Walker again. And I think the other one is Kendricks as well. I thought was sort of him as a bit of a sleeper. You mentioned they were both drafted pretty much at the same time. And for both of them, it's just opportunity. I think they're not necessarily as much of a sleeper as some of the names you've mentioned, for sure. Depends on your league size, I guess. But
right,
the opportunity is the only thing stopping them, because in college, they were massive contributors. So they just need to bring that game into the NBA, and it'll be amazing for us dynasty owners who have held them this long and through more thick than thin at the moment with how little playing time they're getting. But it is good just to see that they are getting some minutes, and it's not just a guy on your bench that you never see getting any action.
Yeah, I apologize. I forgot that we had touched on that already. I definitely remembered that you had Jairus Walker as a sleeper. And I've said this, I think, every other episode, but I just haven't said it this one. It's like some of these sleepers are for those leagues that go 405 or 450 players deep or whatever. But there are still, some dynasty leagues that aren't quite as deep, where it's like, or just managers aren't paying as much attention. They're not the year-round sickos that are diving into every bit of news 365 days a year, where it's like, like Jairus Walker and Taylor Hendricks, like those are definitely sleepers because that's just the way their league operates. So definitely still valuable names there. The last guy I have is Jalen Wilson from Brooklyn. And I feel like I did have all like fairly deep sleepers this time. That definitely wasn't the case, especially during the guard episodes. I didn't have quite as deep sleepers, but Jalen Wilson, I think he'll have a pretty big year for Brooklyn. How big that is, I think, kind of depends on how hard they tank and how quickly they tank. Because they do still have guys that should play in front of him, like Cam Johnson. Ben Simmons is a body that's there. Well, we'll see. He's on the roster.
That was one I wanted to talk about, actually, Ben Simmons. So, yeah, I'll wait till you're done with Wilson. Okay,
And then Dorian Finney-Smith is there. So, like, there might be other guys in competition for minutes. But I think definitely second half of this season, Jalen Wilson is going to play a ton of minutes. He played fantastic this summer, like 21.8 points, 4.4 threes. Like, if they give him the chance, like, he's going to play well, I think, provide a good bit of value. And maybe, even though he was kind of a second-round pick, older rookie, like, he might be able to prove that he belongs in the rotation even when this team is getting closer to being ready to compete, even though that's a few years away. So he might have a few years of value coming up. So we'll see how he does this season, but we can talk about Ben Simmons, because I wasn't expecting to talk about Ben Simmons at all, but we can definitely do that.
Yeah, being a fellow Australian, there's some connection to him. But I think there's a comeback brewing, to be honest. And I know I'm probably alone on this island of this Ben Simmons comeback. But the good news is that it's all mental. The talent's there. We saw that in Philly. And if he can get the starting spot back in Brooklyn and keep it with some confidence, then I don't necessarily think the sky's the limit for him, but I think definitely we'll see the stats kind of revert back to an almost norm that he had in Philly. Elite field goal percentage, elite steals, very high assists, decent rebounds, and sort of lowish to okay points. It's his contract year as well, and it's going to be one of the most unusual contract negotiations I think that's been in a long time. I'd love to be a fly on the wall of that boardroom conversation. But can he get back to 16 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, half a block, and like 56% from the field? The points are going to be the hardest one, I think. He was doing a lot of the rebounds and assists and even steals with his limited minutes he was getting in Brooklyn. So it's just the confidence with his shot. And watching some of his, because I was watching him quite closely to see sort of how he was going, it's like he's deciding before the possession's even developed what he's going to do, if he's shooting or not. And most of the time he's saying, no, I'm not shooting this time, I'm going to pass it. But then there's a play maybe drawn up for him, or one that he sort of thinks, no, I haven't shot in a while, I need to shoot this. And it seems so, so forced. So he just needs to get out of his head. Don't force these weird, janky shots, and just play within what the offense is giving him. But yeah, if he can get back to yeah, sort of what he was doing in Philly. I don't think he'll get back up to those numbers exactly. It'll be amazing. But yeah, we'll see what happens there.
I'm never going to root against him. I really do genuinely hope that he's able to get back to, and honestly, why would anybody root against him at this point? It's like, we've seen him it's very clear. Like, you could look at the numbers just like, and watch, or like see that dramatic drop off and either assume it's some like major injury that he hasn't been able to recover from, or that it is just like mental. And like, you can look at it, like the field goal, like attempts are down, the free throw attempts are down. Like, it's just, you know, I would love to see the Ben Simmons comeback. I'm not banking on it though. I hope you're right, but I'm not going to be banking on it. Harley, that is going to be it for this episode. I know you have your podcast. Do we have anything that we need to be looking out for coming up from you?
I did take a bit of a hiatus last year, just with a few things happening in my personal life. But I should be back to making more regular podcast episodes as we sort of tune into this next round of the next round of the draft. So yeah, my podcast is focused around most of the draft and prospects coming through. So like I said, should be more consistent once the college basketball season really gets underway and I start talking about some of the prospects in there.
Yeah. And you can give him a follow on Twitter at @Harlos_. I'm assuming we should be getting plenty of Cooper Flagg content this upcoming season. So definitely be on the lookout for that. We will definitely have to have you back on here as well, Harley. But thank you so much for joining me. But that is going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast. And I will catch you guys next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.